And good morning, Detroit, and everyone across the Great Lakes state of Michigan. Welcome to AM 760 WJR. This is JR Morning on a Friday.
Yes, sir. A victory Friday.
Victory Friday.
Oh, wow, man. What a great game yesterday. You didn't get a chance to see it. You were somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. Fisher Theater, beautiful place.
Absolutely.
Great show, Hamilton. No phone signal in the theater. Nobody. You're looking around and guys are like hitting their phone. No scores coming in. Nothing. It was the guest that I took, Mr. Wylonis Bill. Uh-huh. He was a huge Piston fan. He's yeah. like, I'm. It was his second Broadway show ever. He goes, I'm sitting here at a Broadway show and I can't get my Pistons.
He's used to the best of both worlds.
But the
right?
show was great. Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me fill you in on what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. Protecting home court, making sure we set the tone. We had a good start to start the game. And, you know, just a high intensity, high focus from everybody. So it was good.
That's Cade Cunningham. The Pistons headed to Cleveland with a commanding 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference semifinals after beating the Cavaliers 107-97 last night at Little Caesars. Cade took over in the fourth quarter, scoring 12 of his 25, including a clutch step-back three that helped seal Detroit's fifth straight playoff win. Cunningham also added 10 assists, drew MVP chants from the home crowd late in the game. Tobias Harris continued his hot postseason, scoring 21 points for his seventh straight 20-point game, despite briefly leaving with a hip injury in the first quarter. Detroit's defense, I'm telling you, Mark, it dominated. It held Cleveland to just 7-32 from the three-point range. And limited James Harden to only 10 points, 3 of 13 shooting. Game 3 set for tomorrow afternoon in Cleveland. And let me tell you, James Harden, he just cannot keep the ball. When we needed to get the ball from him, it was easier to get it from him.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah.
The Cavs go back now, and, you know, my guy Dan Gilbert is taking his team back there. And,
okay.
You know, I have to cheer for the Cavs a little bit.
I know. I get it. There you go. Thank you, Jason. But, yeah, game 3 set for tomorrow. Everybody will be checking that game out. Now, a massive third-party cyber attack is impacting thousands of schools and universities across the country, including multiple institutions here in Michigan. The breach is tied to Instructure, the company behind Canvas, a widely used online learning platform in K-12 schools and colleges. Instructure says the May 1st cybersecurity incident has been resolved and Canvas is now fully operational, but a hacker group calling itself Shiny Hunters claims responsibility and says nearly 8,900 organizations were affected nationwide. The group released a list of alleged victims that includes major Michigan schools such as the University of Michigan, Wayne State, Michigan State, and several community colleges. Both the University of Michigan and Wayne State have confirmed that they were impacted. Social media posts from students in several campuses, including Columbia University and Mississippi State, show reports of disruptions and ransom messages attributed to the hackers. While some on the list of the list has not been independently verified, investigators continue to assess the scope of the breach and potential exposure of sensitive school data. These things happen, seems like, all the time, and we really need to, you know, be aware of what to do about these.
No, the convenience, you know, working at Rocket, very high levels of security like any major corporation, but Canvas, I know that platform well.
Uh-huh.
I was in it at Michigan State, and you just hope your stuff's not still in there, right, all these years later.
Exactly.
But it's scary stuff that, you know, your data is out there, and it's how much of it and what gets released, what gets breached, and companies spend a lot of money, and universities spend a lot of money trying to protect that.
Wayne County Commissioner is calling for an independent investigation after multiple nude images were posted to Sheriff Raphael Washington's personal Facebook account. The posts, which apparently appeared briefly before being removed, included a sexually explicit photo and a video that surfaced in separate incidents. One as recently as last week, another dating back to 2024. Sheriff Washington says he didn't post the material, claims his account was hacked, saying he has since tightened security. But several commissioners say that situation warrants a third-party probe, citing concerns about public trust given Washington's role as the county's top law enforcement officer. Law enforcement agencies, including Michigan State Police and Detroit Police, say they have not been asked to investigate. The sheriff's office has not confirmed whether any outside review is underway as questions continue over how those images were posted and who may be responsible.
And you never want to assume anyone, you know, is guilty of something that gets out there, but at the same time, we talk about transparency.
Transparency,
investigation, that's the way to clear the path the best way.
U.S. forces carried out strikes on Iranian military facilities yesterday after what Central Command says were missiles, drone, and small boat attacks on American warships in the Straits of Hormuz. The Navy says all incoming threats were intercepted. No U.S. ships were hit. Central Command stressed it does not seek escalation, but is prepared to defend American forces. President Trump downplayed the strikes, calling them a love tap, and insisted the ceasefire is still holding. But later on Truth Social, he warned the U.S. would respond a lot harder and a lot more violently if Iran does not quickly agree to a deal. Reports say U.S. strikes hit Iranian ports, including two ports, while tensions at sea remain high following recent missile fire in the region. Meanwhile, diplomatic efforts continue with proposals circulating for a temporary reopening of the Strait of Hormuz as both sides negotiate a broader peace agreement.
My thought always goes to the men and women that are on those vessels, both military and those with the cargo ships.
Yes, right.
Can you imagine the tension, not only of yourself, but of your family that knows that your loved ones are in that area on a boat, whether it's military or fuel or cargo?
Well, yeah.
It's you got to be tense when you're on those boats and you're in that region.
Two leading Republican candidates for Michigan governor facing challenges to their petition signatures just months before the August primary. Complaints filed yesterday with the Michigan Bureau of Elections alleged both Congressman John James and businessman Perry Johnson submitted invalid signatures while trying to qualify for the August 4th ballot. The complaint cites suspicious handwriting, duplicate names, ineligible voters, and even one signature from a woman reported dead for more than 3 years. Johnson's challenge claims he could fall 450 signatures short of the required 15,000 valid names. James's campaign dismissed the allegations as a political distraction, while Johnson has not publicly responded. State election officials are now reviewing the petitions before the Michigan Board of State Canvassers makes that final decision on ballot eligibility.
Six more months, it'll all be over.
Well, we're going through this again.
Again.
Mean, we had the petition issues last time.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way.
It's got to be.
Yeah, it's you think of all the technology we have, and you don't, we were just talking about cyber hacking and all that, but we've got all this technology. You got this where you have to check yourself by clicking on your phone to make sure you're, there's got to be a better way than going through this every 2 years, every 4 years, every 2 years on these elections. It's insane.
And people have been convicted, gone to jail for these fake petitions. And you would think you'd learn and you'd do better.
And then politicians maneuvering what the process is to try to get the advantage for their party or that party. And
It's a different day, Mark.
It's a different day.
It is.
Well, it all goes back to Hamilton.
Right.
That was messed up back then, too, now.
Well, I know. Full circle, right?
Right.
Who's coming up at 6:19, Mark? One of your guests.
Dean Buchanavich is the director of marketing. He was on the Rocket marketing team, did an incredible job there. We've brought him over to the tournament team. He's engaged with everything from social media to bringing in influencers to spreading the word of what's going on with the Rocket Classic top to bottom. Look forward to that conversation.
All right. We'll talk to him next here on JR Morning.
And welcome back to JR Morning on this 2-0 Pistons Friday.
Victory Friday.
Yay! Victory Friday. We are joined now by Dean Buchanavich. He is the director of marketing for the Rocket Classic. Came over from the Rocket marketing team, has an incredible background in history and in sports marketing, Eastern Michigan graduate. The Rocket Classic is coming to the Detroit Golf Club, the 8th edition. It'll be July 30th through August 2nd. Dean, first of all, good morning, and thank you for joining us on JR Morning.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Good morning. Appreciate you having me on.
Good morning. I just want to jump right into it. There's been some announcements about six of the top players coming in. We've seen a lot of change in social media. And Lloyd, for the first time, Rock Entertainment Group has taken on the sales, marketing, and operations for the event. And Dean, along with Carter McCullen and Chris Presson, Sean Coyle, it's a group of guys that have great expertise but now have been banded together as a team to make this the best Rocket Classic ever, right, Dean?
Yeah, that's exactly the case, Mark. We got a small and nimble team, and we've kind of had to assemble fast. You know, we came together at the end of 2025 and really put a group together where a few of us have never had to run a PGA Tour event before. So we've been leaning on each other. There's been a lot of teamwork. Obviously, we're extremely excited about the player announcements that we had just released the other week. Three top 10 players. We got a lot of exciting fan-friendly enhancements that we've introduced to the market and the city of Detroit for this year. And, you know, we're hoping this is going to be the best event yet, and we're confident that we're going to be able to do that.
Dean, for fans who may not realize just how much work happens behind the scenes, what does preparation for this tournament look like right now?
Yeah, it's hot and heavy. You know, I think we're 83 days out. And, you know, a lot of people think that when you're marketing for a PGA Tour event or you're getting ready to sell tickets and obviously create a exciting fan experience, that just happens, you know, a couple months leading into it. But in reality, this is a year-long event. We're working with all of our local partners, all of our charitable partners in the market, and then a lot of people on the Rocket side as well to bring together our creative, how we're coming out into market and promoting the event and giving event awareness, and making sure that the community is excited about the product, the players, and the experience that they're going to see come the end of July. So there's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes. We collaborate with dozens of teams, dozens of internal and external partners to make sure that everything that fans see in the media and out in the market is clean, exciting, and very fan forward for the tournament in the summer. So there's a lot of hands that play into this, and we all work together to make sure that the event comes together in a beautiful way. We're busy right now, and we're excited to keep the momentum moving forward.
As the event just announced, three top 10 players, Ryder Cup captain, two former Rocket Classic champions are just the start of the field of 144 that will take. Joe Hooks, a local kid, has been given an exemption. He's going to be a great addition. There are more exemptions that will be becoming. William Jennings, who won the Folds of Honor. For fans that have been at the first seven, it's been a variety of different experiences. As you've taken the reins and really taken on this strong marketing role, the things that have come forward for fans, what can they expect maybe that's going to be a little bit different than what they've experienced in the past?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a little bit of a change with the fan experience on site. We're working really closely with our title sponsor, Rocket, to improve the fan experience and give people on site a little bit more reason to come and enjoy the experience, not just for the players, but what they can do in and around the golf course. So there's going to be some experiential things that we're excited about that hopefully we're going to be announcing here in the coming weeks. We think fans are going to be a little bit more comfortable on site this year as well. As you guys know, the event moved back a month, so we're expecting a little bit stronger heat and weather that obviously we're going to want to plan for, and we're hoping to provide a little bit more fan comfort this year. So helping everybody stay cool, we're going to give people some options to obviously stay hydrated and some fun giveaway items that we're going to be planning to announce here as well soon. So ultimately, you know, we want fans to come and enjoy the players. And of course, we know that from a competition standpoint, this event's going to stack up with some of the best that we've had. But also, we want fans to have fun. Bring your family out, bring your wives, your children out, and enjoy the entire experience. Whether you're in a hospitality tent or walking the grounds of the DGC, we think that, you know, everyone's going to have a great, great time this year.
And, you know, Dan, you know, the sports and entertainment landscape, you know, it keeps changing so rapidly. How do you market a PGA Tour event to younger audiences and people who may not traditionally follow golf?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And you know, we've actually taken more of a social digital first approach this year in our marketing. I think everyone's starting to consume media and content, as we know, more and more on their phones and less from a traditional standpoint. So we're trying to be more active on social. Obviously, you know, everybody's aware of the craze that's happening with YouTube golf right now and how these golf creators are out there and promoting their own brands. And players have their own brands as well. And we're trying to tap into a lot of the guys that we sign and get committed to the Rocket Classic. How can we leverage their IP, leverage their brand to storytell on the social front or in the digital space where we know most of our audience is now consuming that content? So that's kind of been a big push for us, and that's something that I've been actively working towards building a strategy out and hopefully continuing to do more of in the future.
Coach Izzo, who's coming on later, had a great marketing phrase. You know, I was the marketing guy before.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, Mark, all this work you do, winning is the best marketing tool, which he's right. And there's some truth to this, too. We have great players coming in. But, Dean, you've really taken a look at the experience of the fan from today until the tournament's over. So you approach strategies on ticket pricing, on parking, on, as you mentioned, some comfort areas on the course. You really have taken a focus, I think, for the first time, where you're looking at the patron coming to the Rocket Classic from the time they leave their door at their home or apartment till the time they get back.
Yeah, and we felt like that was the name of the game this year. We wanted to listen to the feedback. We wanted to hear the community. And obviously, you know, we've taken a lot of that into account, and we've tried to make improvements to make this an event that everyone, not only from Detroit, but from the metro areas and the greater state of Michigan, want to travel into the city and see this great city. And of course, the Detroit Golf Club, and whether it's their first time or their eighth time, it's something that they can enjoy. So we're happy to have done that, and we're excited for it.
Dean, I can't thank you enough. Go Rocket Classic. Go Pistons. Go everybody on this Friday. And I got to tell you, one quick story before we go.
Yeah.
Dean's uncle is the guy. When I was a marketing director at Michigan State, his uncle is the guy that helped guide the strategic plan for the success of Michigan State athletics. Len
wow.
Buck.
Wow. There Small world. Small hey, world. Eric Vincent, Detroit Pistons reporter, is going to join us next to talk about those great Pistons, that big win last night at LCA, next on JR Morning.
Being up 2-0 right now, we know it's a thin line still. So it's one game at a time. We got to go into Cleveland now, and they're going to, you know, have their home fans around them. They're going to have more energy in there. So got to handle our business and be focused.
That, of course, was not Mark Hollis nor Lloyd Jackson. That was our guy, Cade Cunningham.
Cade, yes.
After the Pistons win. Eric Vincent, one of the great, great minds that has the opportunity to cover the Pistons, is with us. He was there last night. Pistons go 2-0. And, Eric, you got this team right where we want us?
Absolutely. You see the great energy. You see the guys really coming together. And you really see a lot of that tough adversity pay off from that first series. The Pistons are really floating right now. Love the way that they've been able to play defensively. And offensively, I think they're getting better and better as these playoffs go. So, yes, vibes are all the way up for the Pistons right now.
And, you know, Eric, you know, what does it say about this Pistons team? You know, Cleveland made a big run. They even took the lead. And Detroit still looked pretty calm down the stretch.
This game has some weird deja vu to it. I mean, they did a really good job getting off to a big lead in the first half, going up by double digits. And then the third quarter came back, and Cleveland really gave them their best shot and even took the lead at a certain point as well. And, again, kind of go back to what I was saying, it shows that they're able to kind of handle the adversity of being down or going through a run against their opponent and then finding a way to just stick to their identity, stick to their game plan, not panic, and then still come out with a double-digit lead and to play their best game in the fourth quarter as well. Really encouraging to see from the Pistons. They did a good job of taking care of home court advantage with a 2-0 lead, and now they got to go carry it to Cleveland.
As you've been, Eric, as you've been watching these, we're talking with Eric Vincent with ClutchPoints.com. As you've been watching these series, not just the Pistons, but all of them, there's been such a strong ebb and flow, not only within the games, but within the series. The games seem competitive. Right now, as Piston fans, we're feeling very good being 2-0. But you also want to put up that caution wall, right? That things happen very fast, things change fast within the game, within the series, and you got to stay on top of it when these 7-game series are a grind one after another.
Of course, yeah, that mental focus is going to be key for this team. The good thing is, though, it doesn't have to be perfect. Like, yes, a lot of other teams throughout the playoffs are kind of going through the same thing. You see the Lakers being able to keep pace with Oklahoma City up until maybe the fourth quarter in their last game. And now the Pistons are kind of going through it as well, playing a strong three quarters. And then the most important one in the fourth, being able to kind of show that they're the better team and execute, you know, in their proper ways. And they make sure that Cleveland doesn't, you know, wipe out this lead and take away what they started. So I think the Pistons are doing exactly what they needed to do. You know, they withstood a big 31-point night from Donovan Mitchell, and they've done a good job of making some of their most important players look like liabilities in Evan Mobley and James Harden. So, yeah, it's not looking perfect in terms of how they played, but the timeliness of what they need right now is coming together, and they're able to withstand a lot of the damage that Cleveland is able to do in those third quarters by, you know, still executing late, taking care of the ball, spreading the ball around, getting some open shots from three, which is different because the Cavs are supposed to be the ones of the series known as the good shooters. But the Pistons are doing a really good job of keeping everybody involved to help win.
And Tobias Harris, I got to say, you know, he keeps quietly putting together these monster playoff performances. He had, seven straight 20-point games. Is he becoming like an unsung hero of this playoff run?
he was an unsung hero. I think he's getting sung now at this point. I think you got to start waking up the choir for Tobias Harris. He has been fantastic. I think he's honestly in the midst of playing the best playoff series of his entire career. He's had some good runs, you know, throughout his playing years in the NBA. But with what he's doing now, he looks like he's turned the clock back. It's been really important to see him, you know, find his three-point shot, really getting open from the perimeter. He knocked down two threes yesterday, really becoming a reliable second option for Cade Cunningham. And they're going to him when they're getting a little cold. Like when the third quarter came out and they weren't able to find a rhythm offensively, they went to him fourth in the late, because they kept getting Donovan Mitchell and James Harden matched up against him, and it was food every single time. He was able to back him down in the post, find the ability to kind of get looks off the dribble too, which is super encouraging for a vet at his age. He's really just looked extremely impressive, especially knowing that the Cavaliers have wanted to get Evan Mobley and their bigs involved, but Tobias is putting pressure on everybody else to keep them off balance. So he has been perfect for this series. He was really good in the Orlando series. And it makes the Pistons so much more dangerous when he's involved in giving the exact type of execution and production that this team badly needs on offense.
We're talking with Eric Vincent, Pistons reporter with ClutchSports.com. Lloyd Jackson and I asked some great questions, but the one I want to ask you right now is the questions we're not asking. What are the writers saying in the postgame? I love writers. All the guys in mm-hmm. Michigan State, great relationships. Mm-hmm. I like to listen to what they're talking about amongst themselves. Is there anything, Eric, that we're not asking that maybe the writers are talking about in this series going forward, and what we're not asking is what I'm saying. Is there something out there that's really a piece that that the writers are talking about?
I mean, we're kind of wondering when that magnet ball game is going to come from the Cleveland Cavaliers. They've been kind of cold in terms of some of their production. Like, I don't expect James Harden to just continue to be this terrible and Evan Mobley to continue to be this terrible, you know, in the stretch. JB likes to talk a lot about what the Pistons do right, more so than what the Cavs are doing wrong. So a lot of what the media guys and myself have been talking about is when that game is going to come from the Cavaliers, because you know it's coming. You know they're going to give you their best punch, especially with them going back home for these next two games. So it's going to be important to see how the Pistons can respond to that as well. We saw how they were able to kind of bounce back and fight against Orlando when they got a little bit of momentum on their side going back to their home arena. And the Pistons are going to have that insane, you know, intelligence on the court and that same ability to, you know, withstand whatever they have. So we haven't seen the best shooting game from the Cavaliers yet. We haven't seen them dialed in as a team, and we haven't seen that same execution. They just look completely different ever since the James Harden trade. Even though it worked for some aspect in the regular season, we still believe that it could be a game where they just get red hot, and it puts a little bit of pressure on the Pistons to say, okay, maybe we got a series now. But as of right now, they've done a good job of keeping them in check, kind of holding off on a lot of the runs and a lot of the momentum Cleveland's been trying to put up. But once it does come, you just got to make sure that they're ready for it. The Pistons have done a good job with their preparation so far.
And, you know, Eric, one thing that jumps out, you know, that you got to really say, I mean, the Pistons were down 3-1 against Orlando. They win those three. We won two. So 5 games they've won straight. And it's the toughness of the team. I mean, you got Tobias. He shakes off this hip scare. You got Thompson was in foul trouble. Cade had a slow start. He responded. But how much mental toughness is really fueling this 2-0 lead?
I think it's the driving force completely. I mean, even if you keep going talking about, you know, Jalen Duren, who really had a tough series against Orlando, and then bouncing back in game one, having a huge double-double, putting a lot of pressure on, you know, Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, putting Allen in foul trouble within the first few minutes of three and having to make him sit the whole second quarter. It shows how much belief that this team has. And I was watching it. I think it was on NBA TV where they were actually mentioning it. The connectivity of this team is truly a talent, because while people may question what their talent looks like on paper, the connection that they have and the ability to play together and to play through adversity and tough times is truly a skill within itself, especially for a young team that doesn't have a ton of playoff experience. They're gaining it right now in front of our eyes, and it's doing wonders for them right now. So I think the Orlando series, Dana Jenkins said it after the game. He said the Orlando series did wonders for them in preparing them for this moment, because Cleveland is just not the same type of team. Orlando was long, had a lot of depth, had a lot of good defense that could put pressure on them. And Cleveland just doesn't have that right now. So you're seeing them be able to respond in a much better way because they went through so much physicality and so much turmoil in the last series, and now they're able to kind of look a little bit more fluid and prepare in against the team against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and it's working right now.
Eric Vincent, Detroit Pistons reporter, clutchsports.com. Thank you for your insight and the way that you report the Pistons. But more importantly, thank you for being the person you are. Your depth in what you do
in
your life is incredible. So we appreciate you so much.
Thanks, E.
My pleasure, guys. Hope you have a good one. Take care.
You know, coming up, Mark, we're going to talk about Tarek Skubal. You know, he's going to have this elbow surgery. But really, the work begins after the surgery.
Speaking from experience, I'm looking forward to this one. I've had a few bangs in my body over the years, too, so maybe she can help me.
Well, we'll talk to a doctor of physical therapy next at 6:49 here on JR Morning.
Welcome back to JR Morning on this Friday. Great to have you with us. A lot of great segments we have. This one perhaps the most helpful to me.
Okay.
A guy who has three fusions in my back and four broken fingers, and we were talking off the air.
Yeah.
The most important thing you can do is...
Do the physical therapy.
Dr. Tina Schaefer, she's a doctor of physical therapy with the Neil King Physical Therapy. She joins us now, and we've got some athletes that are banged up right now, too, that are going through that, Lloyd.
Yeah, that's right. Detroit Tigers ace pitcher Tarek Skubal preparing for surgery to remove these loose bodies from his elbow, and a lot of fans are just wondering what happens after the procedure. Dr. Schaffner, when fans hear that someone like Tarek Skubal is having surgery to remove these loose bodies from his elbow, what exactly does that mean medically?
Well, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. From, I'm the physical therapist side of things, not the surgeon, but, we can all look up the surgery online, and they, this is probably one of the more simple elbow surgeries they have. The elbow is a pretty complex joint. And so they go in and they kind of, it's like, taking whatever it is, whether it's a piece of cartilage, piece of bone, out of the joint fluid that usually can circulate around, or hopefully that it settles in someplace non-consequential. But unfortunately, in Skubal's case, it had consequences. So they go in, they take it out, and then it's, best case scenario, which according to what I've read, that's what this is. He's going to go back, work on range of motion and strengthening, and he hopefully won't really skip a beat.
So for a pitcher at the major league level like, Skubal, I mean, how critical is the rehab process after a procedure like this? I mean, that's when the work really begins, doesn't it?
It does, because like I said, the elbow, it's a tough joint. It doesn't have a ton of range of motion. It likes to bend and flex, and that's about it. And getting range of motion back at that joint is really key. And this isn't his first rodeo. He's had a couple of elbow surgeries, so he knows what he's in for. This is probably the easiest of what he's had so far, ideally, from what I've read. So, getting that range of motion back, and because we can get it back early, he really shouldn't lose any strength. If they can keep the inflammation under control, He should be pretty seamless.
We're talking with Tina Schaefer, Neil King Physical Therapy. As you get these athletes, and one thing I've noticed, I've been in college athletics for nearly 40 years. Athletes today seem to be recovering. ACLs used to be career-ending injuries, and today you're almost seeing them come back at the end of the season of the injury. Are there therapy techniques that have improved over the last 10 years that is making it so that these recoveries are quicker? Are guys coming back too fast? I'm amazed at how quickly some of these like quarterbacks are coming back from ACL injuries.
Well, I do think from the standpoint of the education of the therapist, it's definitely improved over the years. We've moved towards our doctorate degree, so we understand the mechanics of the body and how these different tissues are healing. So we have to be a little less conservative. We know when we can be more aggressive. We know when we can push. And these guys are professional athletes. They're in tip-top shape. It's not somebody who's just been, weekend warrioring and they've got some weaknesses here and there. These guys have a team of people that are keeping them in shape. So you're starting with like the best material, and then you have every single, thing at your disposal, whether they're doing PRP at the time of surgery or whatever's after the fact to help speed up healing. So I just think it's the advancements and the education of everyone, the surgical team, the therapeutic team, everyone.
I mean, and when you're working with an athlete, Tina, and and that athlete's recovering from elbow surgery like Skubal, how do you rebuild the confidence in that arm again?
Usually I find with athletes, confidence isn't the issue. It's really kind of slowing them down and reining them in a little bit and say, okay, we're going to push just enough and not push too hard. It's actually slowing them down because they are already anxious to get back to work. So we actually have to slow them down, give a little bit more education and say, okay, we'll get there, you know, in the appropriate timeline. We're just not going to go too fast, because if you go too fast, then things can get a little messy. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned platelet rich plasma, PRP. Describe how that helps the healing process.
I've been taught, because obviously I don't do it, but I work with a lot of professionals in the area that do. It gives all the healing properties right there. It augments the healing process. So it's all the building blocks, all the materials that you need, but you don't have to wait for the body to deliver it. You're delivering it right on site at the time of surgery.
What role does the rest of the body, you know, shoulders, core, legs, play in protecting the elbow during rehab?
Oh, huge. So sometimes when we have issues like this, it's a nice time to kind of let that joint. So they might let that joint, that elbow, rest and recover while they're doing range of motion. And maybe there were other small parts of his pitching mechanics that they've been working on that they'll focus on, whether it was using the hips, using the core. What we find a lot of times with pitching athletes is if you try to use the arm too much, that's when you run into trouble. It's a high velocity, you know, pitching a baseball, it's a pretty violent act for the shoulder and the arm. And you've got to be able to use the trunk and everything. So sometimes you can focus on those parts while you're, you know, helping his elbow come along.
For those of us that are weekend warriors and we have injuries and you don't do the therapy right afterwards, and then you go like, ooh, I should have. It's much more challenging to like catch up after you've not done it. Would that be a good step? I'm trying to give a warning to myself and others that stick to the plan. Otherwise it's going to be a harder road afterwards.
Absolutely. You know, here at Neil King Physical Therapy, one of the things that we really work on is, because we see a lot of the weekend warriors, is we take them a step back. We look at the whole body and we try to create a program that rehabilitates you at the time, but also give you a plan for the off months. What are you going to do in your downtime when it's not golf season, when it's not gardening season, when it's not baseball or softball or whatever season, to keep you in shape so that you're ready to go come, you know, that next time of year?
And when we finally see Tarek Skubal back on the mound, Doc, what probably happened behind the scenes physically that made that return possible?
Oh, for sure. He's got a team of people behind him that they are working on right now. You know, he had surgery on Wednesday, I believe. So they're working on inflammation, compression, ice, and range of motion. And then taking that joint through the range of motion in a safe space so that the muscles, you know, they could be using electrical stim, all different kinds of things, just to keep the muscles awake, so that they don't, you know, tend to fall asleep after surgery because they're not being used. And then they'll put his whole body through a workout. So lots of different people, from muscle therapies that they're going to do, massage, you know, fluid reduction, and then, you know, regulated rest.
Dr. Tina Schaffner, Dr. of Physical Therapy, Neil King Physical Therapy. I think right when we're done, Lloyd, we're going to go out and stretch. We're going to get it.
Range of motion and then use it. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. It's very insightful, all that you shared, and we greatly appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Doc. 7 o'clock hour coming up, top news stories of the day. Plus, we're going to be talking about burgers. Boy, Mark Hollis is over here having a good time. What are some things you may not know about your favorite food? That's all next in the 7 o'clock hour here on 760 WJR.
Being up 2-0 right now, we know it's a thin line still. So it's one game at a time. We got to go into Cleveland now, and they're going to, you know, have their home fans around them. They're going to have more energy in there. So got to handle our business and be focused.
Fired up about Cade. One game at a time, and we get my age. It's one day at a time.
That's right. It's a victory Friday here on JR Morning. Yes, the Detroit Pistons headed to Cleveland with that commanding 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference semifinals. They beat Cleveland last night 107-97 at LCA. Cade Cunningham took over in the fourth quarter, scoring 12 of his 25, including a clutch step back three that helped seal Detroit's fifth straight playoff win. Cunningham also added 10 assists, drew MVP chants from the home crowd late in the game. Tobias Harris, he continued his hot postseason. He scored 21 points for his seventh straight 20-point game. Here's JB Bickerstaff.
You know, I think, you know, as that was happening, you know, they started to pick up their pressure a little bit more. We got a little sped up, but we found our resolve, you know, got back to who we are. And talking about that, you know, it's like moment to moment, right? Like, don't hang on to things that have happened in the past and don't look in the future. Just make the right play right now. And I thought our guys did that down the stretch.
Yeah, Detroit's defense dominated, holding Cleveland to a 7 of 32 shooting from three-point and limiting James Harden to only 10 points on 3 of 13 shooting. Game 3 set for tomorrow afternoon in Cleveland.
And you mentioned Draymond Green was at the game.
Draymond was at the at the game sitting, and one of the reporters asked him, like, what are you doing here? He says, I'm from Michigan. What are you talking about? And so he said it was the first time he had sat down and watched an NBA game at a court on courtside in years. He said Joe Dumars used to bring him to games back when he was younger.
That makes sense. You know, he grew up on the Pistons. I mentioned to you, I was watching TV, saw Anson Carter doing the NHL studio and Draymond doing the NBA studio. It was so cool to see our two Spartans up there.
Wow. A massive third-party cyber attack impacting thousands of school districts and universities across the country, including multiple institutions here in Michigan. The breach tied to Instructure, the company behind Canvas, a widely used online learning platform in K-12 schools and colleges. Instructure says the May 1st cybersecurity incident has been resolved and Canvas is now fully operational, but a hacker group calling itself Shiny Hunters claims responsibility and says nearly 8,900 organizations were affected nationwide. The group released a list of alleged victims that includes major Michigan schools such as U of M and Wayne State, Michigan State, several community colleges. Both the University of Michigan and Wayne State have confirmed that they were impacted. Social media posts from students at several campuses, including Columbia University and Mississippi State, show reports of disruptions and ransom messages attributed to the hackers.
All the things I learned on this show, I'm going to stretch and I'm going to go home and change my passwords.
Yeah, I think you should
do them all.
U.S. Forces carried out some strikes on Iranian military facilities yesterday after what Central Command says were missile, drone, and small boat attacks on American warships in the Strait of Hormuz. The Navy says all incoming threats were intercepted. No U.S. ships were hit. Central Command stressed it does not seek escalation, but is prepared to defend American forces. President Trump downplaying the strikes, calling them a love tap, and insists that the ceasefire is still holding. But later on Truth Social, he warned the U.S. would respond a lot harder and a lot more violently if Iran does not quickly agree to a deal. Reports say U.S. strikes hit Iranian ports while tensions at sea remain high following recent missile fire in the region. Meanwhile, diplomatic efforts continue with proposals circulating for a temporary reopening of the straits as both sides negotiate a broader peace agreement.
And we talked in the first hour, you've got all of this negotiation and process going on, and then we have people that are over there, U.S. citizens, mm-hmm. world citizens that are in harm's way while all this process is going on. So sooner, the better.
A federal trade court has struck down the president's latest 10% global tariffs, ruling that the across-the-board duties were not justified under a 1970s trade law. The U.S. Court of International Trade sided with small businesses that challenged the tariffs, which took effect in February. In a 2-1 decision, the court found the administration overstepped the authority under Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974, which allows temporary tariffs only under specific economic conditions. The Trump administration had argued the measures were needed to address a large U.S. trade deficit, but the court said the law did not support the broad tariffs imposed. Business groups welcomed the ruling, saying it restores clarity and stability for companies tied to global supply chains. The decision marks another legal setback for the tariffs, which were already facing scrutiny after the prior Supreme Court-related challenge.
Where's all this going to go, Lloyd? I mean, it's...
Your guess is as good as mine.
Right? You hear these news reports and you're like, what's the impact on big business, small business? And both of those affect our livelihoods, how we enjoy our lives. Mm-hmm. So these are important things to pay attention to, and it's going to be interesting how they connect to all different levels of business.
And some good news for rocket companies. They're reporting a strong start of the year. First quarter loan volume more than doubling compared to the same period last year. The Detroit-based mortgage giant says it closed $44.7 billion in loans during what is typically one of the slowest quarters for home lending. Rocket also posted a profit of $297 million. That's a sharp turnaround from the $212 million loss a year ago. Both earnings and revenue beat Wall Street expectations. Company leaders credit relatively lower mortgage rates earlier in the year, around 6%, for helping boost demand. But rates have since climbed closer to 6.5% amid global tensions and economic uncertainty. Despite the volatility, CEO Varun Krishna says Rocket is building to platform to perform in any market, not just favorable ones, as the company continues integrating recent acquisitions and expanding its national footprint.
Yeah, congratulations to Varun Krishna, Brian Brown, all the folks over there. It's a business. All businesses are impacted by exterior issues. I think when you look at the mortgage industry, more so than ever, it's really dictated by where those rates are and how you're going to adjust to that in serving the client.
Who's coming up at 7:19?
Oh, we got Charlie Miller-Wise. Now, he's an interesting guy. He worked for the Green Bay Packers for a long time. Mm-hmm. Now he's the cheesehead. Well, we're going to ask him that. Are you a Lions fan or cheese? Yeah. He is the president of Continental and Forte Bellinger, big-time food service right here in Detroit. They run the Hudson and Rocket Classic, all kinds of catering all over the area, and we look forward to that conversation.
All right, that's all coming up. But first, it's time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial, tech, and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. You know what is simply maddening these days? Well, I don't know about you guys, but I simply can't deal with the number of spam calls I'm receiving every day. It interrupts my day, fills up my voicemail box, et cetera, et cetera. You know the drill. I've tried to curtail them, but nothing really seems to work. Seems like the spammers are always one step ahead of whatever defense you try to put up to block them. And now new data from a survey just released by Truecaller entitled the 2026 Phone Fraud and AI Threat Survey puts into perspective just how bothersome these calls are. First, of the individuals polled, 75% say they've been targeted by a spam call or text in the past 12 months. How are consumers handling these calls? Well, 82% say they simply ignore calls that appear to be from unknown callers. And that means that in some meaningful number of cases, they're missing important calls that are not fraud or spam in nature, and they needed to otherwise have been answered. That's up from 59% in 2024. Now, this avoidance could lead to outcomes like professional consequences for the 33% who say calls and texts are very or critically important to their work, and they run the risk of missing some. Clayton LeBroughton, senior executive advisor at Truecaller, said in a statement released with the survey results, people are no longer just screening spam. They're screening out real life, he says. When people miss calls from doctors, schools, clients, and family members because they can't tell what's real, this stops being a nuisance and becomes a real, true trust crisis. Lastly, what type of scams are consumers seeing? They responded to the surveys indicating that they're seeing a lot of calls, 45% spam calls relating to package delivery fraud, 42% to credit card fraud, 36% online shopping scams, 32% medical healthcare fraud, 31% job recruitment scams, and 19% student loan scams. LeBroughton concludes that this is a full-blown communication paralysis crisis where millions of people are so afraid of being scammed that they've stopped answering their phones altogether. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
And welcome back to JR Morning on this Friday, Pistons.
Victory Friday.
We're joined by a good friend, Charlie Miller-Wise. He's the president of Continental and Forte Bellinger. They provide great experiences, unbelievable cuisine in a variety of different areas across Detroit and across Southeast Michigan and frankly beyond. Forte Bellinger is one of the fine caterers out there. Continental, their food service you'll find in many of the Detroit areas. The Hudson Building, they oversee all that. And Charlie, first of all, good morning to you, and thanks for taking some time to join us on JR Morning.
Hey, good morning, buddy. How are you, Mark?
We're doing wonderful. The big question that we've been discussing all morning is, are you a cheesehead or a Lions fan now? Where are you landing? Oh.
Listen, when the Packers stopped paying the mortgage, the blue and silver came right back
down. I know, that's right. Good call. You know, the saying, Charlie, is that sometimes, you know, people may not remember what you said, but they remember how you made them feel. And fans often remember a venue or an event by how they felt when they were there. How much of hospitality today is really about creating that emotional experience?
Oh my God! It's, you know, it's funny you bring that up because we talk about it all the time. I mean, hospitality is just that. It's an experience. It's your senses firing at different levels. And as people are out there searching more and more these days for experiences in their life, we look at what we do as a big part of that.
You know, as you look at the breadth of what you do, Charlie, it's quite remarkable because there's so many different layers of services that you provide. You take a big event in the department at Hudson's. You take setting up an entire food service from scratch out in the middle of a golf course that's servicing 20,000 people a day. And then you cater some of the finest high-level parties that go on. Everything from concessions at OCM to, like, I can't really wrap my head around all of the work that you do in so many different areas. It's remarkable.
Well, you know, we really are a very diverse company. And don't forget, Mark, we've got, you know, 30,000 vending machines all over the Great Lakes, too. And that's really how the company got started, and it's evolved into what it is today. You know, and we tout ourselves as the leading hospitality provider in the Great Lakes, and we can really meet customers where they're at. You know, we have a focus on and really just showing up where people are having experiences, right, and delivering whatever kind of hospitality they're looking for, whether that's a micro market or, you know, where I spend most of my time, which is in the high-end hospitality space or the concession space. But, you know, as people look to diversify their businesses and the events that they put on, the offerings that they put out there, we try to evolve right along with them.
And, you know, Detroit is evolving rapidly as a destination city. And I got to figure that, you know, hospitality and guest experience kind of play into that transformation.
100%. I mean, just looking at Hudson's, you've got everything from, you know, the finest gala that you're going to see to the Christmas programming that happens out on Nick Gilbert Way, where there's something for everybody. And that's truly, you know, you guys were talking about Green Bay. That's what drew me back here as a Detroit kid. To have the opportunity to kind of be sitting at the corner of Main Street and Main Street downtown from a hospitality perspective, there was something really intriguing to that. And I got to be honest, I've been gone for over a decade. And the Detroit that I left is not the Detroit that's there now. And it is truly, the 2 years that I've been back here has really been a highlight in my career.
I'd like to take you through two events and just kind of describe the difference of how you would prepare for these. One is the Detroit Grand Prix has the very first event in Hudson that on a large scale. And flipping that thing around, opening and closing doors, making that experience. And then you go to the Rocket Classic where you don't have a kitchen. You have to build it out on the course. We push you on some things like Aldrich Pot Guider was a champion last year. We do a traditional sandwich for the champion. Mm-hmm. So your chefs had to kind of curate and come up with something. Just do a really quick balance between those two different events.
Oh, geez. As much as they're vastly different, you know, the thought behind it and the planning really, you know, there's just as much work there to put these things together. Obviously, when you're out in a farm field or a golf course with no infrastructure, you kind of start with that, right? How much power do we need? How much, you know, I've worked a couple of events where we've had more power, more temporary power put out there than you would find in the local school district between like five or six middle schools. So that brings with it its own level of challenges, the temporary nature of it, obviously. And when you're outside weather, as you know, and we've lived through some weather events out there at the golf club, can throw some curveballs at you. When you look at the indoor space at a event center such as Hudson's, there's an equal amount of things that you have to check off the list to be ready for. And really, it all comes down to planning, communication, and then ultimately, obviously, execution. What I like about at Hudson's is the way that the care that Dan Gilbert's team took to design and build the building offers us a really unique opportunity because they thought about operations and infrastructure. And when you can operate in a facility like that, the options that lay ahead of you are really endless. And that's why our chefs love it. I mean, they have more fun playing with menus and can get really, really creative. So as much as they're different, it's all about the planning, the execution, and you know, I say this to my team all the time, hospitality failures 99% of the time come from bad communication, whether you're in a restaurant, or you're out at the Rocket Classic, moving sandwiches. It's just, if people talk and communicate, just about anything is possible.
You know, Charlie, you are a graduate of Western Michigan University, and looking back, did you always see yourself leading projects or operations on this scale?
You know, I didn't in the moment, but the funny thing is, when I graduated, I was running Steve Montaigne is a gentleman who owns some Damon's restaurants on the west side of the state.
Uh-huh.
And he had taken on Western's concessions. And when I graduated, I was the operations manager for him running concessions. And then I looked up one day and I said, oh, shoot, I just graduated. What am I going to do now? And found myself down in Chicago. And, you know, it's been kind of a wild ride, 7 relocations in my career, but all sites brought me back home just a couple of years ago.
Small world, Lloyd.
Yeah.
Steve Montaigne I worked with to convert a Damon's into the Spartan Hall of Fame Cafe right in East Lansing.
Oh,
good. Yeah, I know him very well.
I'm telling you.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Stars have aligned for us once again, Mark.
Stars have aligned for us once again. Real quick, if folks are looking at your business and there's different verticals, how do they go about learning kind of the breadth of what you do and perhaps how they could use your services at something they're working on?
Yeah, like anybody, start at our website at continentalserves.com, and that'll take you to a bunch of different drop-down menus, whether you're looking for something for your business, your place of work, or you're looking to put on the next best wedding in Oakland County, we can help you on any front.
Yep. Well, as a client, as an attendee, they're incredible, and we appreciate all that you do for the city of Detroit, elevating everything around here. It's incredible. Charlie Millerwise, President, Continental, and Forte Bellinger.
Thank you, Charlie. We're talking burgers next on JR Morning.
And welcome back to JR Morning. TGL, tomorrow's Golf League, will be entering its third season, and we'll have a new participant. The Motor City Golf League will be part of the excitement that takes place down at SoFi Stadium in Florida. It's televised nationally on ESPN. And two of the principals of that great team right here from Motor City, Detroit, Michael and Peter Hamp, join us now. And big unveiling of the logo. We got the logo. Now we got to get the players, guys. Peter, exciting day for Detroit, for the Motor City Golf Club.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Thank you,
Mark.
Go ahead.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, go ahead, Peter.
Peter, talk about the unveiling of the logo. We'll start there. The marks of the Motor City Golf Club.
Yeah, well, we're really excited to unveil. Last week, we it's been a long process to get here. We announced last May that we'd won the bid for the seventh expansion franchise to TGL, and really since then we've been working hard with our brand agency to create a logo that we felt really feels authentic to Detroit and kind of aligned with the other great sports franchises in this city. And we're really excited with how it came out. It one of the things we wanted to have was that it was blue, like our other a lot of the other we're big Michigan fans. We're both from Ann Arbor. Obviously, we're Lions fans and Pistons, and so leaning into that color and into some of the just kind of brand heritage of Detroit, around things like speed, automotive design, all that, which we think really come through with the checkered design on the logo and on our monogram with the sort of mid-century modern design to it. And we're really excited with how it came out. It's been a great reaction to it locally over the last week.
And I guess the race fan that Jim Farley is, he probably enjoyed the logo when it came out. Michael, connecting this team to the city of Detroit is an important component for you and for the team. You spoke at Midnight Golf, College Career and Beyond, and that was part of the pathway of the value that this club, the Motor City Golf Club, has to the city of Detroit in that announcement.
Oh yeah, absolutely, Mark. I think we need to that connecting with the community and building our fan base is really mission one. We represent Detroit. We take that very seriously. The one of the things we've talked about though, as coming into this league is, our matches are actually played at the SoFi Stadium in Palm Beach. And so we need to really, really, really lean in to the local community to make sure we're developing the fan base and following we need locally, because that's massively important. And that's the bedrock of a sports team. And as you talked about Midnight Golf, when we were thinking about this before we were bidding for the team, before we even, had won it, that was on our short list of groups we wanted to connect with. If we were fortunate enough to be able to win the bid, it fits kind of everything we would look for from, you know, helping Detroit's youth, mentoring, you know, and doing that through the game of golf. And so it really was a very natural alignment for us. And as we said at the gala last week, you know, we're going to have two students intern for us as we start to build this team out, and also have donated some scholarships.
Well, I want to congratulate you both. I can't thank you enough. As we get toward starting to announce the players, we look forward to having you back. But congratulations. Unbelievable leadership both of you are providing this organization, and we look forward to chatting with you very soon. Thank you so much.
Amazing, Mark.
Yep.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. You're always welcome here on WJR. We love the team. We love the PGA Tour, and we look forward to collaborating with you coming forward. So thanks. Michael and Peter Hamp.
And, you know, America loves hamburgers, Mark. And, in fact, we eat about 50 billion of them every year. But how much do we really know about one of the country's favorite foods? We're going to be speaking now with Chris Carosa, author of the book Hamburger Dreams, Yale graduate, Forbes contributor, and self-described hamburger historian. Chris, good to have you here on the show.
Good to have me. Thank you.
Yes. So let me tell you, you spent years researching burger history for your book, Hamburger Dreams. You know, what is it about the hamburger that has made it such an obsession in this country?
You know, that's one of the most fascinating issues. I haven't been able to crack that case. You know, if you think about it, hot dogs were around well before hamburgers were. But if you consider what fast food is today, nobody really thinks about hot dogs as much as they think about hamburgers. So what the heck was it about hamburgers that really captivated Americans to just eat them all the time? I mean, the best answer I could have is, unlike hot dogs, hamburgers were invented here in America. And maybe it's just considered one of those all-American kind of dishes.
What's the origin of the hamburger? Like, is it Germany? Is it where did the hamburger really first originate from?
A lot of people will assume that it's from Hamburg, Germany, only because of the name. And it's funny because in the 1960s, McDonald's was doing a PR stunt, and they went to Hamburg, Germany, to present the mayor with a certificate thanking him for inventing hamburgers. And when the mayor got the certificate, he says, "We didn't do this. You guys did." So Ray Kroc, being the PR guy that he is, turned the whole thing around and made a lot of news out of it when it happened. But really, yeah, it did occur here in America. There's a lot of different competing stories about where the first place was that the hamburger was sold. And that's really the purpose of my book, Hamburger Dreams. I treat it kind of like a cold case, you know, a criminal mystery, and trying to find out the clues and where the most likely place is where the hamburger was made. And it's pretty interesting, just because I went back to old newspapers and I was able to trace back the origins pretty convincingly, at least to me, that it was the first hamburger was sold on Friday, September 18th, 1885.
There you go.
Wow.
When you're preparing your hamburger, what's the perfect combination for your hamburger? What do you like on it? Is it just describe the perfect hamburger to you, being the expert that you are?
So now I'm an expert in terms of the history, not so much in the
preparation.
But I will tell you, I am kind of, so being an Italian, I kind of put Italian spices, mix it into the meat, and cook it just like you would normally cook a hamburger. So it's sort of like a meatball, but it doesn't have the breadcrumbs in it. But it's very spicy, and then I just do what everybody else does, ketchup, relish, that sort of thing.
Jalapeno and provolone, that's what I put on mine.
Oh, that sounds good, too.
That's all perfect. Unbelievable. The history is incredible. This is it's right up my alley. I've been excited about this hamburger conversation all day, and I can't thank you enough for joining us, Chris. We look forward to reading your book. I'm definitely going to grab that one.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
All right, Chris. Coming up at 7:49, the coach, Tom Izzo. Yeah, we're going to talk about basketball at Michigan State. Also, we'll talk about the NBA playoffs and the Final Four as well, I'm sure, and NCAA expanding. What he thinks about that. But first, Automotive Views with Mark Martinez is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org.
Ford is shedding more light into the secretive team working on arguably its most important vehicle in years.
The automaker recently gave tours of its new electric vehicle development center in California, where the team is working on its new Universal EV platform, which will underpin a number of models, including a mid-sized truck. What's most striking about the new center is just how much the group is trying to distance itself from the mothership in Dearborn. CEO Jim Farley's key card purposely didn't work at the team's first offices. Alan Clark, who came from Tesla and leads the EV team, refers to Ford only as their venture capital firm. Any longtime Ford veteran who wanted to work on the program had to be vetted, and some didn't make the cut. Ford's letting the group operate as a company within a company, knowing it needs to drastically reduce costs and speed development time if it's to compete with the Chinese. What they do in California could become the new product development standard, but first, they need to successfully launch that mid-sized truck. We'll get our answer next year. With this week's Automotive View, I'm Mike Martinez with Automotive News.
It's hard for me to jump on top of this song,
I know it is.
Welcome back to JR Morning. It's great to be here with Lloyd Jackson on the great voice of the Great Lakes. Head coach Tom Izzo is more than a basketball coach to not only Michigan State University, but the state of Michigan. Does an incredible job of serving as an ambassador through good times, bad. He has the ability to bring things forward in such a positive way, and he joins us now. Good morning to you, Coach. It's great to have you on WJR.
Well, Mark, Lloyd, thanks, man. I wish I felt that important, but I appreciate all the good things. Call my wife and tell her that. She doesn't feel that way about me, but whatever you guys say, I'm all in.
Yeah, let me negotiate your best contract, I'll do whatever.
Coach, a couple of them over the time.
Coach, I got to ask you about those Pistons. They take a 2-0 lead over Cleveland. What impressed you most? Is it their talent, their toughness, or just the confidence that they're playing with right now?
Well, being the coach that I am, I have to say I'm really impressed with the job JB has done. He has instituted some toughness into that team. I mean, when you do things like that in your culture. And I remember when he was at Cleveland, he came up and spent a day, and we just talked about a million things, and I was so impressed with him then. And watching him and watching his team play, I kind of compare him to us in this respect, although they have a super, superstar in Cade Cunningham. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the team is just good blue-collar, tough team. Some guys are getting better. But they guard you now, and they rebound the ball. They get after you. They're physical. It reminds me, I told Isaiah, I saw him a week and a half ago at a game, and it looks like the old Bad Boys in some respect.
Yeah.
You know, Coach, a lot of announcements are coming out of the NCAA expansion from 68 to 76 teams. But one that hit me closer here to home – name, image, and likeness has been the acronym we've been hearing lately, yet the University of Detroit takes a hit on APR. I've not heard of an APR impact since I retired almost a decade ago. It blew my mind when I pick up the paper and I go, what's going on here?
Well, I tell you, now you hit something that, as you know, I struggle with some of the things. I'm all for paying players, just not the numbers. I'm not all for the transfer portal because – nothing in sports has a free agency every day of the year. But this latest thing, and it hits home because my former assistant, Mark Montgomery, has done such a great job there last year and got his team almost to an NCAA tournament. And I'm on a bunch of committees, as you were, Mark, and we've been arguing for 5 years that there shouldn't even be an APR anymore. Because when you let kids transfer when they want, do what they want, how do you control anything? And this thing, I'll use a couple of tough words, disgusting and insulting and absolutely insane. Those are the three I'll come up with. And I'm all for academics. You know what we've done here. But these people that think that we can control this, when you're letting them leave when they want, leave to go pro when they want, and you think they're going to finish up their stuff, somebody's on dial-a-clue. They don't really have any idea what reality is. So I'm not happy with some things the NCAA has done, but this one, since I was involved in it 5 years ago on boards, when we told them this was going to happen, and I'm like you, Mark. I never heard of it in 5 years, and all of a sudden they get a place like University of Detroit. I felt bad for Monty. Feel bad for the players. I feel bad for the institution. And personally, geez, I hate to be insulting. Like, I think it's a joke. How's that?
Yeah. And Lloyd, you look at these things. The NCAA has permitted all these things to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yet, the things that they change impact all the schools negatively. Perhaps the schools like the University of Detroit even more so.
Even more so. Absolutely. Coach,
Coach,
the 76-team expansion cleared a big hurdle, a unanimous committee vote. Having spent decades in the 68-team era, does this kind of feel like a natural evolution to you, or are we risking fixing something that wasn't broken?
Boy, I'm on for a nice walk in this gorgeous campus with no stress, and you two guys, friends of mine, are hitting me with all these controversial
things. I'm breaking so news media now, Tom.
You went to the dark side, but I would say that, again, you know, it's not talked about much with the coaches. Coaches have no say in any of these things, and I was a little surprised. I'm not sure I'm for or against it, but I do think we've got probably too many teams that are in Division One that don't belong in here. That's one problem. And two is there are a lot of teams in, so should you expand a little bit if you have a takeoff football and the number of bowl games compared to the number of teams and all that? But I hope it doesn't get watered down, you know, and I hope we don't lose – the excitement of what it is, but I don't really, we're not fed the information on why. We're just like soldiers. Tell us what to do and we do it.
The Detroit Economic Club has Jay Batt and President Guskowitz down here today. Ryan Armani is going to be over there live on JR Afternoon. Let's focus on Michigan State and the positive things that are happening. The Final Four is in Detroit this year. Your team, your preparation. You know how desperately I want to see the Spartans right down here at Ford Field once again for the Final Four.
Huh. Another alum putting pressure
there
on
me. There we go.
One of my best friends is putting it on me. You know,
anything less. Anything less.
Yeah. Get to the Elite Eight and you're fired. I understand it. But, you know, first of all, let me say this. I am been so impressed with our president. I think you and I had a good one for some time, and then we've gone through a lot of different ones. But Kevin has been a breath of fresh air. I mean, he walks his campus every day, walks his dog, and he's been out as much or more than any president I've ever met. But when you're president, like when you're coach, you know. Some people like you and some people don't. But I think the job he's done has been phenomenal. And I think, you know, one of the reasons I'm excited on hanging in there is because I think we got great leadership and it's going to really take us to new places. As far as the, tournament, great for Detroit. I was down there for the opening. Great for guys like you, Mark. I'm all in to help everybody get there, but I'd sure like to get there myself.
As would we. We appreciate you so much, Coach. Get that walk in.
Yes, Coach.
And stretch afterwards.
That's right.
All right,
guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Coming up, top of the hour, and the latest news, sports, the Pistons winning. They're up 2-0, and Jamie's going to join us as well. Jamie Edmonds is going to talk about part two of her podcast. That's next on JR Morning.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. Protecting home court, making sure we set the tone. We had a good start to start the game. And, you know, just a high intensity, high focus from everybody. So it was good.
Mark, it's a Victory Friday here.
Victory Friday right here on JR Morning.
Oh, man, those Pistons headed to Cleveland now. They have that commanding 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference semifinals. They beat Cleveland last night 107-97 at Little Caesars. And Cade, man, he took over in the fourth quarter, scoring 12 of his 25, including that clutch step-back three that helped seal the deal for Detroit's fifth straight playoff win. Cunningham also added 10 assists, drew MVP chants from the crowd. Tobias Harris continued his hot postseason, scoring 21 points for his seventh straight 20-point game, despite briefly leaving with a hip injury in the first quarter, and the defense did very well. You know, the Cavaliers kind of caught up, and they went ahead, but then JB says everything turned out okay.
You know, I think, you know, as that was happening, you know, they started to pick up their pressure a little bit more. We got a little sped up, but we found our resolve, you know, got back to who we are. And talking about that, you know, it's like moment to moment, right? Like, don't hang on to things that have happened in the past and don't look in the future. Just make the right play right now. And I thought our guys did that down the stretch.
And, like, the defense dominated. They held Cleveland to 7-32 shooting from three-point, and they limited James Harden. I mean, I don't know what's going on with him in these playoffs, but he only had 10 points on 3-13 shooting. And game three is tomorrow.
And game three, and it's the biggest game. The next game's always the biggest game, right?
Always the biggest
game. But this is the one. Are the Pistons going to be up 3? Are they going to be 2-1? And that's a big difference in a 7-game series.
And I think we can get one, at least one, in Cleveland. I would love to sweep them.
Right.
But if we can get one in Cleveland, we can come back and finish it here at LCA.
Absolutely.
A massive third-party cyber attack impacting thousands of school districts and universities across the country, including multiple institutions in Michigan. The breach tied to Instructure, the company behind Canvas, a widely used online learning platform in K-12 schools and colleges. Instructure says the May 1st cybersecurity incident has been resolved and Canvas now fully operational, but a hacker group calling itself Shiny Hunters claims responsibility and says nearly 8,900 organizations were affected nationwide. The group released a list of alleged victims that includes major Michigan schools such as the University of Michigan, Wayne State, Michigan State, several other community colleges. Both the University of Michigan and Wayne State have confirmed they were impacted. Social media posts from students at several campuses, including Columbia University and Michigan's Mississippi State, show reports of disruptions and ransom messages attributed to the hackers. While some on the list have not been independently verified, investigators continue to assess the scope and the breach of potential exposure to the sensitive school data.
And it's a problem. Kirk Gibson's son is in the cyber trying to figure out, you know, try to be advance of these silver, whatever they are, guys that are coming in doing destruction.
Yeah.
The amount of money that companies now have to put into things like this is astonishing. But it's they bring in guys that try to hack to try to solve the hack, and it's
that's
it's,
usually what they do,
right?
Yeah, right.
It's how do you break these down? How do you stop them?
Wayne County commissioners, they're calling for an independent investigation after multiple nude images were posted on Sheriff Raphael Washington's personal Facebook account. The post, which apparently appeared briefly before being removed, included a sexually explicit photo and a video that surfaced in separate incidents, one as recently as last week and another dating back to 2024. Now, Sheriff Washington says he didn't post the material, and he says his account was hacked, saying he has since tightened security. Now, several commissioners, including Angelique Peterson Mayberry and Sam Baydoun, Alex Garza, David Nizek, they say that the situation warrants a third-party probe, citing concerns about public trust given Washington's role as the county's top law enforcement officer. Now, law enforcement agencies, including Michigan State Police and Detroit Police, say they haven't been contacted or asked to investigate. The sheriff's office has not confirmed whether any outside review is underway as questions continue over how these images were posted and who may be responsible.
Yeah, again, and we only know what we know, and that's not everything. But transparency, investigation, those are things that need to be part of this or any other allegation that comes forward. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of that.
Yeah, you know, you don't want to lose the respect of your counterparts either when these things happen.
Right. It's the validation comes through the transparency process.
Absolutely. U.S. forces carried out strikes on Iranian military facilities yesterday after what Central Command says were missile, drone, and small boat attacks on American warships in the Straits of Hormuz. The Navy says all of the incoming threats were intercepted. No U.S. ships were hit. Central Command stressed it does not seek escalation, but is prepared to defend American forces. President Trump downplaying the strikes, calling them just a love tap, and insisted the ceasefire still holding. But later on Truth Social, he warned the U.S. would respond a lot harder and a lot more violently if Iran does not quickly agree to a deal. And reports say U.S. strikes hit Iranian ports, while tensions at sea remain high following recent missile fire in the region. Meanwhile, diplomatic efforts are continuing, with proposals circulating for a temporary reopening of the Strait of Hormuz as both sides negotiate this broader peace agreement.
As you hear these reports, as you hear the negotiation, you know, as I mentioned in the last hour, my mind just keeps going to all the people that are over there. They're serving on ships, whether they're military or cargo. There's so many people's lives that are in the hands of what's going on with these talks, these negotiations, and we need to get this thing resolved.
Two leading Republican candidates for Michigan's governor facing challenges for their petition signatures just months before the August primary. Complaints filed yesterday with the Michigan Bureau of Elections allege that both Congressman John James and businessman Perry Johnson submitted invalid signatures while trying to qualify for the August 4th ballot. The complaint cites suspicious handwriting, duplicate names, ineligible voters, and even one signature from a woman reportedly dead for more than 3 years. Johnson's challenge claims he could fall 450 signatures short of the required 15,000 valid names. James' campaign dismissed the allegations as just a political distraction, while Johnson has not publicly responded. State election officials are now reviewing the petitions before the Michigan Board of State Canvassers makes a final decision on ballot eligibility. We're going through this again?
We are. It seems like in our society today, we have the technology not to have to go through this, but the decision makers need to approach it in a way that voting needs to be fair. Why are we going through this again?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't get it either. And some good news for rocket companies, reporting strong start to the year. First quarter loan volume more than doubling compared to the same period last year. Detroit-based mortgage giant closed $44.7 billion in loans during what is typically one of the slowest quarters for home lending. And Rocket also posted a profit of $297 million. That's a sharp turnaround from that $212 million loss a year ago, and both earnings and revenue beat Wall Street expectations. Company leaders credit relatively lower mortgage rates earlier in the year, about 6%, for helping boost demand, but rates have since climbed closer to 6.5% amid global tensions and economic uncertainty. But good news for Rocket.
Yeah, Varun Krishnan is doing an incredible job. Brian Brown, the CFO, as you look at this, it's the decision-making of those interest rates that really determine a lot of the structure, but the way they are adapting to interest rate variables is incredible. And we're getting now into the home buying months, right?
It's the
springtime. This next quarter is going to be an interesting to watch for all the folks at Rocket.
What's coming up at 8:19, Mark?
We're going to talk with Troy and Linda Clogg. They are the co-founders of a group called Hot Pink Helpers that really has a positive impact on folks that hear those words, you have cancer, particularly breast cancer. And the work that they do in easing some of the financial strains that go with that.
We can't wait to talk with them. It is a Victory Friday. Pistons up 2-0 here on JR Morning.
And welcome back to JR Morning on this Detroit Pistons Victory Friday.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. There we go. Hot Pink Helpers is an organization that is led by an all-volunteer board. 100% of their funds that come in go to help those individuals that have heard the words, you have cancer, and particularly breast cancer, cope with some of the challenges that come forward. When you hear those words, you don't know what's going to happen next. I can speak to that firsthand. You're worried. You're scared. In many cases, you don't have the financial resources to step away from your job. You have to continue. Life goes on. I was talking with Kim Adams yesterday about that. Here are the challenges you have before you. Troy Clogg and Linda Clogg are the co-founders of Hot Pink Helpers, and it's an organization that's growing in notoriety. And part of that notoriety is there's more demand out there than they can serve, and they are continuously working to generate funds through golf tournament. They have an event coming up Saturday. It's Keys for a Cause. It's at Elevate right down here in One Campus Marshes. And before I tell any more, let's get the co-founders on here, Troy and Linda Clogg. Good morning to you, Troy. Give me the reason why. I mean, you run a very successful landscaping business. You've got things going, and you decide to put all of your time, all of your energy, as well as your wife's Linda's, into this initiative.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Hey, yeah, it's the birth of Hot Pink Helpers dates back about 15, 20 years. A lot of us have been through tough times in our life. In my case, not cancer, but like so many, divorce and tough times in the business when the economy crashed. And I just paid attention to my prompts. As far as I'm concerned, I was driven to serve the world. And so I took, in my business, salt is the worst part of the industry, if you will, as a landscape snow guy. Nobody likes it. I colored the salt pink and created a product that we could sell across the United States and Canada called Hot Pink De-icer, a bagged product for sidewalks and so forth in the snow industry. 15 cents of every bag, and it's about an $8 product, and we sell hundreds of thousands of bags at this point. Fed the charity in the very beginning. So that's kind of the where it began. From there, it led to building a board, creating the 501c3, and just continuing to serve the world. I think we're all here to make a difference in somebody else's life and to help and serve others. And this became our vehicle. Then I was super blessed to be surrounded with a great group of board members, starting primarily with my wife and daughter and moving on from there. And yeah, fast forward to today, we have a lineup. It's heartbreaking. There is just a line of people who need financial assistance when they're going through the toughest time in their life.
And Linda, you know, sometimes people think fundraising events are just about, you know, writing a check. But nights like this, you know, this Keys for Cancer Dueling for a Cause, I mean, they also create like community and hope, don't they?
They sure do, Lloyd. I'm excited this morning as we are just about to go into our second event of our history. We usually have just had this golf outing, but we knew we could do more. We, as Troy said, the need is great. And so we do have people applying almost every day needing help. So we created this energetic Keys for Cancer, Dueling for a Cause. I'm excited for, you know, the energy that's going to come through this community of ours with Hot Pink Helpers. They never disappoint. They always show up. We've got some exciting, fun, high energy event with the Keys for Cancer, the dueling pianos. If anyone's ever been to one of those things, you know how much fun they can be. And we have some great auction items. I know we're going to have a great night tomorrow night.
As you look at this event, again, it's Saturday, so tomorrow night, is there still an opportunity for folks to be a part of the fun, hear the energy of the music, interact with people, meet new people, and really hear the story? And also, Linda, while you're answering this question, when you present the checks, you present the checks. It's not a wire transfer. You go and you talk and you're part of their lives.
For sure, Mark. You know, cancer affects people so much more than just physically. It's emotionally and financially, and it's super important to us to, we go to their homes, come into their living rooms, hear their stories, share tears sometimes, but let them know that it's certainly a financial help, right? Like we're giving a grant, but also that they have a friend and they have a support, and you know, these relationships can go on afterwards. Many times they do. So that's super important to us as a board. We have 7 people on our grant committee, and you know, there's just a big group of people that are going to come into you and, you know, just love you up, right? That's our goal. and yes, we do have tickets available still. It's not too late. You can go to hotpinkhelpers.com, click on the event tab and come and see us tomorrow night. Have a great time with us.
And, you know,
and make a difference doing it.
Oh, absolutely. And at the end of the evening, you know, beyond the donations raised, what would make you feel like the event was truly a success?
Well, we need to expand the knowledge of our organization across our community further outside of the circle that we've
that we've created so far, and we are growing, so that would be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we need to make some money, right? Because we don't write these checks. Yeah, we don't write these checks without the support of the community that surrounds us. And as I said earlier, this community never disappoints. They always show up for us, and you know, we are 100% volunteers. So if you could get down there and help us raise some money so we can continue to say yes, right? The donations that people make to Hot Pink Helpers, they can know that a 99.9% of every dollar we take in goes directly to the families. And that's what we need to do.
Troy, we got about 30 seconds left. How can folks learn more information about Hot Pink Helpers?
Well, certainly on all the socials and at our website. But most importantly, just come tomorrow night. It's a beautiful event, 6 to 10 o'clock, One Campus Martius.
We appreciate you both, all the work you do. You know, those that have cancer, have family members, friends, I think we're all impacted. And I look forward to joining you tomorrow night and being part of somewhat of a celebration, but really the ability to impact our family, friends, and neighbors in a positive way. Thank you both.
Mark, amen. Thank you. Thank you for your support.
And someone close to us who is going through it right now, Jamie Edmonds, our co-host here on JR Mornings, and she announced a couple of weeks ago that she has breast cancer, and she's dealing with that right now. She's also created a podcast, Jamie's Journey, Angels Along the Way. She dropped her second episode. We'll talk to Jamie, find out how she's doing, and talk about this latest episode next on JR Morning.
And welcome back to JR Morning. Great conversation with Hot Pink Helpers, and very
yes.
relevant to our loved friend, Jamie Edmonds.
Exactly. And, you know, Jamie recently revealed her breast cancer diagnosis and has since launched this powerful new podcast, Jamie's Journey, Angels Along the Way, where she's opening up about her experience in real time, you know, through honest conversations, including episode 2, which featured as a breast cancer surgeon from Henry Ford Health. And she's offering a window into both the medical journey and the emotional reality of facing cancer. And Jamie, we appreciate you being here. It's always good to hear you. How you feeling?
Good morning to you both. Hey, Mark, how are you? I'm feeling okay.
We're doing okay, and it's great to hear your voice.
And
yeah,
you know, I listened. I was telling Mark this morning, I listened to episode 2 of the podcast, and boy, did I learn a lot. You know, my wife had breast cancer as well. She had it mm-hmm. in the milk duct. And I know the surgeon talked about ductal cancer and another form. And some of the things that I learned from your show, Jamie, from your podcast, I'm sure probably some of the things that my wife's doctor said to me, but I was so caught up in the fact that she had cancer, I probably didn't hear a lot of it. So I was able to really listen and hear it from your podcast. And I thought it was really good.
Thanks, Lloyd. I appreciate that. My plan here is, my purpose here is to try and include as many people going through this as possible. So I use my case as a basis. And this surgeon is a future angel, I called her, because she's going to be my surgeon when the time comes.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about all kinds of different types of cancer and how that affects people differently. And we also talked about how women who don't have cancer right now can be proactive. So I'm really just trying to get the information out there. I feel like that's my purpose.
I think that's a big part of it, is the proactive part. Lynn Gleiser is a dear friend that works for Rock Entertainment or Rock Events downtown. I was talking with Kim Adams yesterday, who's been a friend for a long
time. She's one of my angels too.
She is. And yeah. Being preventive, you know, I heard the words, you have cancer. I've got that under control. When you hear those words, it's shocking. And you don't know, like, what's my future going to be? What's going to happen next? And as you get the right advice, as you listen to your angels and you hug your angels and bring them in, it helps with that whole process of it's going to be okay. But the sooner you can get in, and, mm-hmm. and you hear that all the time.
Yeah.
The sooner you can get in, the better the situation is going to be.
Yeah, Mark. And I remember when you told me at the Rocket Mortgage Classic that you had cancer, and here we are a couple of years later, and you know, I'm affected too, and it's the scariest thing you can possibly hear. The thing with breast cancer is you could feel lumps. When it's a cancer that's inside your body, you can't. So this is something that can be, if not prevented, at least you could get in there as early as possible. So on this podcast with this surgeon, we talk about self-breast exams and some things you might notice within your own body. And women just have to know what's going on within their own body and be proactive.
And how are you personally doing right now, Jamie? Not just physically, but, you know, emotionally, as you continue, you know, through this testament and recovery.
Well, actually, I got a nice message from Congressman Tim Walberg recently, and it was, you know, a Bible verse. He is certainly strong in his faith, and he was saying he hopes I'm okay. And I'm like, you know what? I'm okay most of the time, but there are some times when I'm by myself in the car driving or by myself at night where the dark thoughts come in and you worry, like, I hope that all of this is going to work. I have a young daughter. I want to be around for her. So leaning into my faith is something that I've been trying to do as well. And he sent me some nice verses. And my third episode of the podcast is with a Henry Ford psych oncologist about how you deal with this terrible news.
And you go through, you mentioned your daughter, is you get support from your family, you get support from those others, but you also have responsibility. You're a mother still, you're a wife still. And those responsibilities don't go away as you're going through this. And that's part of that emotional and psychological process of getting yourself healthy from a physical standpoint, but maintaining your attitude and your approach, which you've always had a beautiful one and you continue to through this process, that has to resonate at the highest level as you're dealing with this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a unique thing that younger people with younger kids deal with when you go through cancer, and that's where your support system comes in. And my friends have been taking Olivia to play dates, which really helps because I don't have the energy that I used to have. She still wants to go to the park down the street, and she just, you know, still wants to run around, and I can't chase her like I used to, which actually makes me really sad, but I know I will get back to a place where I can. And in the interim, I need to accept help from my support system.
You know, and as a broadcaster, and I think we spoke about this, Jamie, you know, your voice has always been part, you know, of telling other people's stories. How does it feel to now use that same voice for your own kind of healing and awareness?
Well, it's still weird, Lloyd. It's honestly weird that I'm the subject of some of these, and my case is out there, and my story's out there. It's so weird because when I went to Northwestern, it's like, you're not the story, you're telling other people's stories. So it's weird. It's odd. But I'm starting to find meaning and purpose through it. So, you know, and I see my Instagram messages and some strangers who've been reaching out. And so if it's reaching people, then I need to keep going.
I think as you look at it, one thing I would say is, you know, the condition that you have is there, and you can approach it in two different ways. One is in isolation and one is public. In isolation, you're dealing with it in kind of this vacuum. The way you're approaching it is while you're getting healthy, you're sending the message that others can identify it, they can get healthy, and that's a gift that you're giving to this community.
Well, that's my hope. I mean, I hope that's happening, and I have gotten some nice messages from people. And in fact, for with this podcast number two with the surgeon, I had some questions that people sent me through Instagram, and I asked the surgeon. So hopefully we could get this back and forth. I'm going to move forward with the topics here with the resources like Hot Pink Helpers that are available to people in Detroit. I'm going to get my husband on too. We're going to talk about how a caregiver deals with some things, you know, especially with a young kid. So I'm just going to put it all out there, and I hope it helps.
And one thing I also learned on the podcast, the second episode, Jamie, is that, you know, I guess back in the day, when you would have breast cancer, a lot of times your only option was a mastectomy, but now you can have a lumpectomy. And it depends on the type of cancer and how that follow-up happens after have either a mastectomy or a lumpectomy. And then just the rebuild, if you want to rebuild it, you can either do it right after surgery or you can wait a little while and do it later. So I learned a lot. I'm telling you, I really did.
Well, thanks for listening, Lloyd. It really sounds like you did.
I tell you, I do. I listen. Yes, absolutely.
Well, you know, the surgeon, Dr. Jessica Benzenhaver, was saying that things have changed in the 15 years that she's been doing this. And the things that worked back then, they found better ways to do it. So I'm grateful that I'm going through this right now when all the science is where it is. And yeah, we're going to make decisions for surgery for my particular case after chemotherapy. We'll see how my body's reacting. I hope, God, that it's reacting in the right way. And we'll move forward.
How can we hear your podcast?
So you can go to the WJR YouTube page if you'd like to watch it. There's a video component. But, you know, a lot of my friends across the country are listening in the car. You can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you search by name, full name, Jamie Edmonds, it probably will come up and you can listen.
And, Jamie, you know how Fridays are here. It's Feel Good Friday. And we'd like to know if you would stay around for our next segment. It's with a young lady named Darlene Lee. She's 68. She's a 68-year-old grandmother, a cancer survivor, who is set to receive her high school diploma this month.
You know what? I need some feel good. I'll stick around.
Okay. Thank you. We'll talk to Darlene next at 8:49 on JR Morning.
And welcome back to JR Mornings. It's good to be here with Lloyd Jackson.
Yeah.
I almost slipped there.
Oh,
I didn't,
you almost
though.
Said Sunday, right?
I almost said Sunday. Feel good. Feel good Friday stories are always enlightening. People's lives that change over time, and Darlene Lee is just an incredible story. Graduating at the age of 68 after dropping out of high school in 75.
Yeah, she dropped out of high school to become a mother. She's 68. She survived cervical cancer and 4 heart attacks. And she's going to be getting her high school diploma on May 31st. Now, we were supposed to have Darlene this morning, but we found out that she can't be with us. She is in the hospital, and she's getting some stents done in her heart. She's going to be okay, but I still just wanted to bring her up. And Jamie, here's a woman who has dealt with cervical cancer, 4 heart attacks. And she decided, you know, I dropped out of school to be a mom back in 75, but I still want to get my diploma. And she went for it, and she's going to do it. And not only is she getting her diploma, Jamie, she's going to be the keynote speaker at her school, which is the Tri-County Education Center.
That's awesome. I mean, again, like back to the podcast, episode 3 is with this therapist, and they say once you have cancer, maybe Mark, you could chime in, things change, and like what's important to you changes, and the little things are big things to you. And maybe she always wanted to do this. She went through these life-threatening things, and she's like, you know what? I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I think the one thing that does change is who you spend your time with and what that time is spent doing. That's, to me, that's the variables. It's part of a trigger of being, you know, older in age, but it's also a trigger of hearing something, of understanding that, you know, life is a gift. Every day is a gift. And what you're doing with those days, who you're doing them with, is so, so critically important. And it's pursuing things that you haven't done in the past. And that's where Darlene's story comes forward. Is there a reason why you want to get a degree at the age of 68? There was to Darlene, and you've got to tip your hat to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jamie, I got to ask you, since you're the sports person, about these Pistons. They're up 2-0. They head to Cleveland tomorrow to take on the Cavaliers. What are you thinking right now?
I'm thinking this is so exciting. They were dead in the water against Orlando. Dead.
Yeah.
And they needed a little bit of help. I mean, maybe that Franz Wagner injury and that time that they missed a historic amount of baskets. You know, yeah. Who cares why they got here? But now they certainly have their groove back. They look like a number one seed.
And do you think that series with Orlando, you know, being down 3-1 and that series with them, let's really kind of, you know, gave them their groove back and really showed the grit that they have in this team?
Well, sure. I think it absolutely did. I think it also taught this young team a little bit about adversity and how you get through a playoff series and you never give up. And one thing that this team does is they play hard. That's something my husband said last night when we were watching. Like, this team plays hard until, you know, the whistle. And I think that's admirable.
I think it's the golden tempo. The Kentucky Derby, he showed the Pistons you can come from here to there and win.
Right, exactly.
And once he did that,
yeah,
we were off and running, right, with golden tempo. It's two great stories of perseverance and how to, you know, don't give up. Mm-hmm. There's a horse running last place, and to see that aerial of him coming around that corner.
Oh man, that was amazing.
Same thing with the Pistons. The series down 3-1, and then the game where they're down 24.5.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable messages for all of us to not, you know, like Darlene.
Yeah.
Don't stop fighting. Keep getting after it. And that's the great thing about sports is it gives us that lesson in life so many times.
You're going to have a bunch of coaches talking about Golden Tempo and maybe the Pistons in their, like, pregame speeches for sure.
Yeah. Do you
Coach Izzo wasn't talking about that today.
Oh man, no. We had the coach on today, Jamie, too, and we were talking about the NCAA expansion and also
He's out on that plan.
Oh yes.
And Detroit getting the APR, he really wanted to talk about that one.
Oh, he really did. Yeah. He really did. Yeah,
you know, going like from that. Name, image, and likeness to Jamie, we have not heard of an APR penalty since I retired. I have not heard it. And all of a sudden, University of Detroit gets one. And Tom was very outspoken about it.
I mean, I've talked about it on this show. We haven't heard anything about academics in years. Like, years.
Yeah,
like,
right.
do these people even go to school anymore? And now there's this APR?
Right. To a school that gets, you know, all these schools are getting impacted by all the things that is being allowed to happen with athletes,
right.
with students, with campuses. So you've got all of this going. And then they focus on one school and drop an APR violation. I don't understand it at all. Nor does Coach Izzo.
Well, I agree with Coach Izzo.
what do you think about our Tigers? Skubic going under the knife on his elbow, and you know.
Yeah, but it looks like the prognosis is good, and he can start working out soon. So that's the best case scenario.
What do you think about the suspension that happened earlier this week? The suspension of Valdez, was it?
What? Yeah, Frambar.
Frambar. Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that?
I don't know how I feel about that. I saw the headlines. It was like midweek, right when I'm getting treatment. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to focus on what's going on over here.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, you know, they need to get back on track, too. They got to get those bats going again. And our pitching rotation, I'm sure, is all funky now because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they also, the season is so long. What do you guys think about, I just think 162 games is way too long. What do you think?
It was a long time.
Back in the day, it was the thing, right? The games were slower, a lot of games. It was America's pastime.
Yeah.
And is it?
I think everybody's, you know, a little quicker now. Everybody's a little bit more impatient.
Is the TV contracts, are they still as lucrative as they were back? Because then you had the games, so you get the broadcast.
Sure.
Well, now they're fighting and. You know, Chris Illich put together this network to get the games, and you wonder, is the economic value there to justify the 162 games? Great point.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't really pay attention to baseball until hockey and basketball's over because the season's so long and I'm so, you know, intently watching those other things that I kind of don't pay attention until summer hits.
Well, tell us before we go about the next episode of Jamie's Journey, Angels Along the Way, who that will be with.
Well, it's out right now. Episode 2 is with a oncology breast surgeon, and she talks about all kinds of different pathways for women and how to be proactive. That's out right now, wherever you get podcasts or the WJR YouTube page. And then the third one's going to be with a therapist, and I hope a lot of people can get something out of that, too. When you get horrible news, how you work through it. And I think it could have applications for people who have maybe other diagnoses or just, you know, grief within their life. I hope it helps.
All right, Jamie Jane. Always good to talk with you. Glad you're doing well. We'll keep in touch.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks, guys.
Mark, it was great being with you.
You as well, JR Sunday. Patrick Duffy and Linda Pearl are going to join us.
Oh, the man from Atlantis?
The man from in Dallas. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Okay, real good. Well, thank you for listening this morning as well. Kevin Dietz, All Talk is next. Have a great weekend. Go Pistons!
And keep driving, Detroit.